The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, you are back with Breaking Banks. We are live from New York. And it's not Saturday night. I don't know. That was a joke. You have no SNL tonight. So, hey, listen, guys, we've got some news for you, which we're going to get to in a moment. But I just did want to announce to you guys on May 10th and the 11th, I hope you guys are going to be in San Francisco because I'm going to be there launching, we're going to have a move-in at Finovate. And I'm going to be launching my new book, Augmented, and we're working on something really, really special for the launch. So if you're coming to Finovate in San Jose, Finovate Spring, May 10th and the 11th, then you may very well get the opportunity to get a free copy of my new book, Augmented, at an event that we're putting on there. Make sure if you can get there, it's going to be a hoot. We're going to have like three parties that week, launch parties, and the move-in team's going to be there. And I can't say what we're going to do at Finovate, but something special is going to happen there as well. If you guys know Finovate, of course, you know we've been involved with the Finovate organization. We're an official media partner with Finovate. So Finovate Spring is really sort of where it all started for Finovate. You know, as you know, Finovate has this demo-only format. They have 70 companies, 70-plus companies involved over the days there. You just get 7 minutes to demo your latest innovation to the audience. It's sort of become this de facto fintech industry launch pad for products. And then they have networking sessions following the demos each day. That's really where all the business gets done. People see the demos, they come to your booth, and you get the chance to make your one-on-one connections with the innovators you see on the stage, as well as, you know, the other fintech professionals in the audience. We're bound to have many of the fintech mafia there. Some of the hosts you see on you have on Breaking Banks will be there. And you just, if you go to spring2016.finovate.com and check out the companies in attendance, you'll see Move in there. And also you can register. And of course, being a official partner of Finovate, Breaking Banks gives you a 20% discount. Our promotional code is BreakingBanks20. Not hard to remember. And you get 20% off the ticket price. So check it out. Also, don't miss on May 12th, the day after Finovate in Silicon Valley, NextBank USA. Go to nextbankusa.com to check that out. Of course, our own JP Nichols, who has hosted the show a couple of times and is a regular guest and a good pal of mine, will be running NextBank USA. I don't know if Rob Finlay is going to be there. He's the NextBank founder. But hopefully Rob's going to be there as well. All right, so what else has been happening in the space? We're going to talk about a few things in a moment. There's one thing is there's retail banking analytics in London coming up from the 20th to 21st of June. They have Chief Data Officer from Barclays, Lloyds RBS, Head of Group Customer Data Strategy at HSBC, the CEO of BVA Data and Analytics. And I wonder if they're going to have Shamir, who runs the new API team at BBVA. They were in New York doing a sort of a soft launch of that this week. The team, I didn't get to catch up with them, unfortunately. I wanted to. But there's also in London, there's a lot of Challenger Bank stuff happening. Asseco, Tandem, Mondo, these guys are also been involved in that. So if you wanted to sort of get a picture of what's happening in Europe with the Challenger scene, then check out Retail Banking Analytics. It's the website www.fc-bi.com, Retail Banking. And we have a discount code for you there too. It is BKVIP150. So that's Retail Banking Analytics Europe, BKVIP150. Okay. Whew. We'd like to thank our sponsors for those very important messages. So now, let's get on to some news. Great to see that Betterment closed a $100 million round. I don't have the data in front of me. I just had it before, but I closed that webpage. But it was at a $700 million valuation, something like that. So John Stein, who you know has been on the show, and Betterment team's been on the show a few times. I don't know, Rachel, do you remember? It's been a year. It's been a year since we had John Stein on the show. Did you realize that, Rachel? Yeah. Yeah, is she nodding her head? I can't see. So it's a year since we had John on the show. So this would be a good excuse. So John Stein, if you're listening, come back on the show. Tell us what Betterment's going to do with $100 million. Citi announced they have a great report out. If you're interested in the report, check out our Twitter feed. That's Breaking Banks One, or just use the hashtag Breaking Banks. We'll tweet out the report. Rachel said John Stein was on in July. Maybe. I don't know. Could have been. The Citibank report has said fintech is starting to significantly disrupt the banking space. And they've said that the current boom we're seeing in fintech will lead to a 30% loss of staff or cuts to their staff. Now, that's not in Citi. They are predicting this across the retail banking landscape. That is a huge deal. Now, for those of you who have been asking the question, fintech or big banks, you know, we had this debate. Digital bank debate, Michael Panovich and myself, Chris Skinner, Jim Morales. We had this debate. Who's going to win, right? One thing we know is that, there will be banks that make this transition, but financial services will be forever changed by the introduction of fintech. I don't think there's any question about that now. With, you know, we could have up to $100 billion invested in fintech this year. If you think that that level of investment, the sort of deals we see like Betterment did this week, if you see that level of investment coming into the market, it can't help but change the way we think about the sector, particularly in respect to the fact that if you look at a Betterment, they're a much more efficient business than a typical asset management business. Their acquisition cost is lower. Their cost of managing their clients is lower. Probably their risk model and their investment strategies are probably going to be better because they're machine intelligence based. You know, you can't have a scenario where that isn't going to have an effect. And then with artificial intelligence and automation, financial advisors, tellers, risk officers, compliance officers, to think that AI won't impact people in the industry, come on. Come on. Anyway, there's my rant for the day. You are listening to Breaking Banks. That's what we do. We rant about this stuff. Okay, one more piece of news before we get to our first guest, Ashley, who's a reporter for Quartz. Fedor Bank has announced they're closing in on their US launch. They just need a bank charter. So, hey, Suresh Ramamurthy from CBW, maybe you can help him out. He's our partner at Moovin. Square also, I guess you guys heard Square's getting into the lending business. Not a surprise. Amazon's already done it. Alibaba's already done it. It makes sense for a Square to jump in as well. Okay, so now what we'd like to do is invite a reporter from Quartz. You guys know we have Ian. But Ashley Rodriguez, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let me ask you, Ashley, what do you do at Quartz? Your moniker is a reporter, but what do you report on?
I cover media, marketing, and just general business news.
Okay, so the reason we wanted to get you on today is you recently have been publishing around this J.D. Power and Associates study on millennials, and this report wasn't focused on millennials in banking, but millennials generally, and there's some pretty interesting stuff that sort of focus on the fact that millennials are quite different in terms of the way they behave, the way they spend money, the way they deal with service organizations, how they look at complaints, their stickiness with organizations. So tell us a little bit about the survey itself.
Well, the survey was actually a set of surveys. So it was 20 different rolling surveys that J.D. Power conducted over the course of 2015. And each survey looked at a different industry or different area of focus, so banking, travel, utilities, wireless, auto, things like that. Overall, they spoke to about 120,000 millennials and more than 240,000 boomers. And really the purpose was to see how millennials and boomers differed in their approach to a lot of these industries in terms of service, cost, and a lot of other areas.
Now, you called them grumpy.
Well, I did call them grumpy, primarily because I noticed that from the findings, millennials tended to find more problems with services and products, specifically in the utilities and wireless space. So out of 100 connections on mobile, they noticed more problems with their services than boomers did. And that also they also contacted customer service about issues like these more often when it came to both utilities and wireless. So we do take things a little bit more seriously. We notice when there's a problem, and we will call customer service to get that rectified immediately when we notice that.
So listen, I just before we continue with this, I forgot a very important piece of news. Did you see, Ashley, have you seen Watson 2016, the website?
I have not, no.
So IBM is proposing that we enter Watson into the race for president in the United States. Watson for president. So check it out, Watson 2016. Now, the reason I put that in there is that, you know, for something like this for millennials, they find it cute. But when we think about technology and its implications of how millennials expect to be serviced, they you know, with you know platforms like Snapchat and these other things, you know, is the element of service. When if they're dragged into an interaction where they've got to call someone, for example, and that service interaction or that problem can't be solved just through these more efficient, you know, P2P channels and things like that that we have, is that a source of grumpiness and friction for millennials?
You know, we do like to do as much as we can on our own. We're very, we like to be self-sufficient. We like to use self-service options wherever possible. But I will say that if we have a positive customer service experience, that's really impactful as well. So what the study also found was that millennials were more likely than boomers to return to a service if they had a problem and it was resolved. So we are pretty forgiving as well.
You say we because you're in this millennial space.
I am, yes.
So then I'm not, by the way. But I am a digital native or a digital immigrant, depending on how you want to refer to it. Yeah, I'm digital first. So I think I probably have a lot of millennial in me. But so you say that the generation expects products and services to work correctly and you have little tolerance when things go wrong. So is that... You know, is that a specific product set that expectation is, or is that more a systemic expectation?
I think that's true across the board. You know, we're very value-driven, so if we're going to spend a lot of money on something, we expect it to work. If I'm paying $100 for cable and internet a month, I expect my cable and internet to be working properly all the time, and if it doesn't, I'm going to call Time Warner Cable or whoever, and if they don't fix it, I might go elsewhere. But in the same tone, if I buy a $20 pair of headphones on Amazon and they break in a month, then I'm probably just going to throw them out because I'm realizing that I got what I paid for.
Right, right. So in that respect, you guys are probably fairly honest customers, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
So do you think that there's an expectation of a technology component to the relationship for pretty much any product or service? Do you need, for example, you know, if you have an appliance that you launch or a product you launch, should you have a companion app for that product, you know, where the app itself is in the product? Is there an expectation there'll be a digital element to products and services generally?
You know, we're seeing it more often, and I think moving forward, as as you mentioned, appliances and all these other things tend to have digital components, I think that it will be expected moving forward. But that's also to a degree, right? If I'm doing something like buying a mortgage, I probably still want to talk to people and do a lot of the research that I would do elsewhere, go to banks and things like that, rather than do it all online.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you guys engage for new services? I mean, we hear these rumors in vernacular all the time that, you know, or the anecdotal evidence that you guys are very digitally led, and if friends recommend a service, that's a rapid way for you guys to engage, and you know, you research stuff online, and that's, but then later you might go into a store and have a physical relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So like something like Rocket Mortgage, what did you guys find out about that?
Yes, I personally am skeptical a little bit about Rocket Mortgage, although I do get the value for it. I've not gone through the mortgage process myself, but have friends and colleagues who have and understand how time-consuming it is. So with something like Rocket Mortgage, I can understand the value of being able to do a lot of that research and take away a lot of the pain points that come along with it. But I also think that me personally, if I were a first-time mortgage buyer, or home buyer, I would still want to meet with people and do a lot of that legwork. Now, one area where I do think it would be really valuable is refinancing, because you probably have a little bit of experience under your belt at that point, so you're able to go through it a little bit more smartly. You know what you're looking for and all of that.
So what determines for you whether you'd want to see a human versus whether you'd be prepared to do it on a platform? Is it the complexity of the decision or the product?
Yeah, I think it's the complexity, but also, again, if I'm new to something, I personally like to do a lot of research, and I know a lot of my friends do and people that I know do as well. So I think if it's something that I'm not as well versed in, I like to have that human element where possible.
So, you know, with this show, we talk a lot about fintech and, you know, disruption of financial services by technology. So what specifically did you learn that differs millennials from, say, boomers in respect to finance?
In respect to finance, actually, one of the findings of the study is that apart from, you know, like wanting to do a lot of things themselves and having self-service elements, that there were a lot of similarities between the groups. You know, they used many of the same big brands. They weren't as anti-establishment as you would think. They still stuck to a lot of the big banks and things like that. So I think there were still a lot of similarities as well.
Yeah. You know, so I've got this question for you. So as a millennial yourself, do you think that if it's easy to use and there's some thought to the experience, there's some design to the process, is that more compelling to you? Is it a more valuable relationship if you feel like they've done some work? Whereas if you come up to processes or an organization that's stuck in very traditional, I know you need to provide 17 pieces of paper and can you fax this through and can you do that? Is there a significant difference when you have a business that's been designed to work with millennials?
Yes, absolutely. And I think people price again is like the big driver we're finding in a lot of studies for millennials. But I do think if something makes your life easier, then you're willing to pay for that. And a lot of studies, including this one, have shown that.
So millennials are cheap like the rest of us.
That's right.
All right, listen, we're just going to go for a quick break, Ashley, and then after the break, I want to ask you about the gigging economy. I know we didn't talk about that in the sort of setup, but I want to talk about how millennials are working and whether that has an impact, and just to get some comments maybe on the travel industry, and then we've got a couple of guests coming in after the break as well. All right, cool. So listen, before the break, guys, a quick shout out to Temenos, who is, of course, the show sponsor. And Temenos is having an innovation jam in Dubai on April 6th. And our very own Sam Moore will be the key speaker there and giving feedback to the innovators. JP Nichols just did Singapore. I did their Miami event. Go to breakingbanks.com and check it out if you want to register for the Temenos Innovation Jam in Dubai. But we'll be right back after this short break.
guys, Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. Thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramez Nam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on the Google self-driving car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, "We're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots." Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time. Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, this is Brett King, your host of Breaking Banks. Use the hashtag Breaking Banks if you would like to participate in the conversation today. We're talking millennials, and coming up in a moment, we have an old friend of the show, serial entrepreneur, founder of TrustDev, Pat Phelan is coming up in a moment, and he's now at TransUnion, and Paul Siegfried from TransUnion. But at the moment, we are talking millennials, and we just had on before the break Ashley Rodriguez, who's a reporter for Quartz, and we're talking about millennials and this J.D. Power's customer satisfaction survey that was done. Now, just Ashley, you know, to sort of frame this, you know, you would sort of believe by reading, media around millennials, that there's some sort of strange, fickle, anti-establishment beast. They all feel the burn, you know. Is that what the study showed? Are they very different in terms of their approach? Are they more fickle than baby boomers?
No, actually, it found the opposite, that they were not as anti-establishment as most people thought, and that they tend to stick with a lot of the big brands that boomers and other use as well, and that was across the board. They also were just generally more satisfied overall with a lot of industries, which is also pretty interesting.
I noticed the study said it was more about nuances of customer experience.
Exactly, yep. Exactly. So there were certain things that, of course, stuck out. And a lot of it's generational, too, cost being one thing that's very important to them, service being another.
Mm. Now, listen, what about the travel sector? I know you called that out specifically in the report. What did you learn about the experience with the complaints in the travel industry with ticketing, bags, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, that was one area where millennials tended to have more problems than boomers. And one of the big pain points for them was checking in. So arriving at a hotel, not being able to secure an early check-in or get in on time. So just a lot of things around flexibility, being able to make reservations in an easy way, being able to get different amenities throughout the service.
Yeah, I hate that when you can't check in.
Those are, of course, pain points that bother all of us, but we millennials tend to be a little bit more sensitive to them.
Well, you know, I give you an example. One of the things that really annoys me, because I do a lot of travel for speaking, right? You know, when I am speaking on the road. And so I'll sometimes have a thing where I arrive in the morning and, I need a hotel room because I've just got off a plane. I want to shower and get changed and be ready to speak that afternoon. And then I might fly out at 6 o'clock, right? So there's no way to get a room under that scenario because you've got to pay for two nights. That's the only way I could do it. Right? And it's just strikes me as ludicrous.
Or you have to hope they're gracious enough to give you a really early check-in, which is rare.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm not going to stay there. It's where it's a process where it's broken. Where, you know, Airbnb, you could probably do that. But, yeah, anyway.
Airbnb tends to be a little bit more flexible, but even they have pretty strict check-in and check-in out or check-out times.
Yeah. Now, there's this old saying that, when I was 10, I thought my dad knew everything. By the time I was 18, I was surprised at how much he didn't know. And then by the time I was in my 30s, I realized how much he did know again. Right. So what about, I saw this piece in the report where it was sort of this respect for elders. The different approach in terms of visualizing the world. Do you think that a bit of this is millennials really believe they can make this system better?
I think that's part of it. I think that while they can make the system better, they do have those aspirations that they're looking forward to. So they do want to change things. They're very, idealistic. I think that's also a generational thing.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, this has been very interesting, Ashley. Where can we check out more information on the report and on yourself?
You can check out the story at QZ.com.
Millennials are even grumpier than boomers when it comes to customer service. That's on QZ.com, Quartz. And the releases on JD Power, you can just check out their press releases for the Millennials Insight Report customer experience perspective. Ashley, thanks for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so up next we have joining us from TrustDev and TransUnion, Pat Phelan and Paul Siegfried. Pat, welcome back, or welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much, Paul. Thanks so much for having us on today.
No worries. So Pat, first of all, before we get into the whole TransUnion thing and so forth, for those that aren't familiar with it, tell us about TrustDev, when it started, and then tell us about the process of being acquired by TransUnion and you guys merging with them.
Sure, absolutely. One interesting thing, I just saw a startup the other day, because they came in and talked to us, was dayuse.com, which allows you to rent hotel rooms by the hour or by the afternoon or by the morning. So
rent it by the hour.
That was interesting in your last piece.
Renting by the hour has sort of a different connotation. I don't want to rent the morning to the evening.
Absolutely. So we started this about 3.5 years ago, myself and my co-founder, Chris Kennedy, in Cork in Ireland, and it was really an issue with that we had seen and that we had suffered from online fraud in transactions. You know, the people don't actually know that it's the merchant that gets hit with all the fraud. They think it's some magic system that the credit card companies pick up, and we were getting hit with a lot of fraud, and I couldn't believe that there wasn't something that was easy to integrate. You know, we live in the API age. So we built it ourselves. We launched just over 3 years ago, funded by ACT Capital, Greycroft in New York, Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson?
If you were a different Michael Jackson. That's his name. An Irish entrepreneur called Liam Casey, who owns PCH, which is one of Apple's big suppliers. So we built a team in Ireland, done really well. And we had a project for a large US mobile carrier who were being hit with fraud, and we needed someone that had a database of American consumers that we could actually build into our database. And we met a guy called David Neenan, who works at TransUnion. David's head of international, and we started working together. We done a fairly sizable seed round. TransUnion came in on that. And we've been working together ever since. And I suppose it's really it was a coming together based on attraction. We had all the technical piece of the infrastructure, behavior, location, device, mobile, history, etc., that digital footprint. And TransUnion has this amazing footprint of over 630 million human profiles globally. And to put those together, you know, it was a marry of rich identity data with digital data, and we do that in real time. So that's what really attracted us, and that's what brought it together. And we came together just before Christmas, and it's working out really well. We're very happy.
Good. Now, where did TrustDev physically start?
Physically, TrustDev started in Cork, in Ireland.
In Ireland, yeah. You're Irish, are you?
If you can get the, you can just pick that up slightly.
I couldn't tell. All right. So, and for those of you that are sort of checking this out as we speak, TrustDev is TrustEV, right? So, but now it's part of the TransUnion Group, of course. So Paul, you know, welcome to the show. Tell me, what attracted you about TrustDev as a business?
Well, I think Pat did a great job of summarizing it, Brett. It's the technology that they brought to the table, in addition with our data that have combined to create a pretty powerful solution. And so it's just been still a learning curve. And I think as we continue to take the solution out to the U.S. client base, as an example, and I'm based in the U.S., based in Chicago headquarters, we continue to have tremendous success on that side as we talk about what was the TrustDev solution, now a TransUnion solution in that fraud space.
Yeah. Okay, so what was the core product for TrustDev? Just to go over that with a bit more clarity, Pat.
So the core product was a single line of code, one API, that made a decision in real time, was the customer who he said he was. So eliminated fraud for very large e-commerce merchants globally. And that's basically was the stage one of the project.
Can you talk about how it did that?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So basically, the first part of the equation was we were able to place one line of JavaScript on each page on the website. So that allowed us to look at behavior. Behavior is a highly indicative piece of fraud. So if you were a fraudster today, you would probably, if you were going to defraud Apple.com and steal an iPhone with a stolen credit card, you would probably not come in at Apple.com, but you would come in at Apple.com/iPhone 64 gig rose gold. So you can see that fraudsters' behavior is on a website, their actual journey is completely different to the normal customer who browse, who looks at terms of service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we look at deep location, where we're looking at the IP, is there a proxy in place, get the originating network,
Then we're looking at the device, device ID, operating system, browser. Is there a VM in place? Are they cloaking? And then we're looking at things like mobile, and we're looking at things like history, and we're combining all that together. So we're potentially looking at thousands of digital and device signals in real time. Now, mix that with the TU piece and do all that in real time, e-commerce time, especially for digital. We have a lot of customers in the gifting space where you have to make that decision instantly in, you know, sub half a second.
Yeah, yeah, that's very, very cool. So where did you get all the data?
We built everything ourselves. So all the data on the technical side comes internal, and all the other data comes from TransUnion.
Right, cool. So hence the marriage. Makes sense. So
it's a perfect marriage.
So you guys are launching this platform called Prama. Does it stand for anything, Prama?
Well, Brett, Prama is actually comes from Sanskrit, which would be, you know, from an Asian root that really means the source, or that another version could be the truth. And the reason why we chose that is that as we develop solutions for institutional clients, and these are data solutions, is that we feel it's a great representation that our data, as Pat referenced, 600 million or in the U.S., 200 million records of data, is that that becomes the source or the truth of what we're built on, right? We believe in our tagline is information for good, and that means that consumers benefit, our institutional clients benefit by us providing the best, most accurate data.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's impressive, 200 million files. Does that sort of correspond with all of the active credit scores in the U.S., or how do you get to that 200 million?
Right. So it's based upon the active credit records or credit files we have in the U.S. Obviously, we're an international-based company as well, so we've got a significant business in other countries. But within the U.S., it's about 200 million today that are active credit files.
Now, you know, there's been a lot of talk on this show previously. We've had a couple of shows on it about the fact that, and I probably should have asked Ashley about this as well, but that the credit score is sort of fundamentally broken now. I mean, for people who, you know, boomers who've been in the, you know, have been taking credit for 20 years, it's it works. But, you know, for millennials entering the world with, you know, student debt, it's a disastrous model. Right. So is Prama making some attempt to think differently about credit access and the way we assess someone's you know, viability for credit?
Well, I think there's really two things that you've gone into a great direction here. And really, I love the way that you're able to leverage the prior topic and bring it into this one, because there isn't just one score, right, Brett? There isn't just one category of scores. I think there's multiple categories of credit scoring that are out there. And when we think about how TransUnion looks at this, and we look at what we call credit vision, which is not just one score, but a suite of scores that we have. And what we've done with credit vision now is to expand our offering within credit vision by expanding the score ranges. Now, what does that mean? It means we've been able to, through a new product we call Credit Vision Link, bring other data sources in and create a new score. And this new score can be paired up with other more traditional scores like Vantage, where
so listen, a lender
can now use multiple scores at one time and get a different perspective of a consumer.
Okay, so Paul, I'd like to really dive into that, but we've got to have a quick break, so stick around. Guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We have Paul Siegfried, Pat Phelan from TransUnion talking about how we use data in the real-time financial world. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Okay.
Hi, it's Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. Thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramez Nam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on the Google self-driving car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, we're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots. Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time. Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, so this is pretty interesting. I don't know whether you saw, and before I get back to Pat and Paul, but I don't know whether you saw, but there was a bit of a revolt over at Barclays in the last few weeks where customers have been really flipping out on Barclays about their lack of Apple Pay support. The tweets on this are brutal, absolutely brutal. So just yesterday, in the terms and conditions of Barclays UK on their new landing page, they have put in Apple Pay in their terms and conditions. So it appears like the customers have won, that Barclays said they didn't need Apple Pay because they had their own contactless payment technology. And it turns out the customers determined that wasn't sufficient. Now, this is an interesting precedent because if you look at what's happening in Australia right now, Australian banks have said, we're not going to work with Apple Pay because we don't want to pay Apple for this service. But what is happening is that the operating system, the wallets or the mobile payment vehicles in the OSs, whether it is Android Pay, Apple Pay, or Samsung Pay, and I'm sure we're going to see something with Microsoft in the near term. These are becoming a de facto network where if you want to pay, you're going to pay with your phone. You're not probably going to use an app that you launch an app and use that app. You're going to have something that's tied into the iOS ecosystem. And so in that respect, it's sort of like if you want to do card payments, you know, you've got to use MasterCard or Visa, right? You know, and in many ways, Apple Pay, Android Pay, Samsung Pay are becoming that new infrastructure on top. So banks that have said, no, we're not going to use Apple Pay, we'll do our own thing, finding it very, very difficult to maintain that stance because customers are saying, I want to use my Apple to pay, you know, and you have to use Apple Pay. Anyway. A little bit of a side note there, so check out that on Barclays if you're interested. And if you want to see that story, I posted on my Facebook feed earlier and on Twitter under Brett King as my Twitter name, so you can check it out. Hey, so you know, Pat and Paul, before the break, we were talking about the new Prama solution coming from the Sanskrit that means truth. That's far too much thinking behind a name that I'm used to, Paul. Normally it's like, is there a domain name available? Oh, that sounds cool. Let's go for that. But let me get drilled down on something, Pat. You talked about the sub half a second speed to do this analysis. You know, where do you see this the application of this sort of data or this sort of API going? In terms of that requirement, are you seeing suddenly a massive uptake in the requirement for a real-time analysis of whether I can trust you in a transaction when there's two parties involved in a commerce interaction?
I think it's we probably started off in commerce and now we're in account opening, credit application, you know, probably across the remit of anywhere there's any interaction besides financial, you know, where obviously, which is our home base. There's also, you know, someone wants to open a club, he needs to ensure that the people joining are who they say they are. And that's where that coming together was, that we now have this digital piece and we now have this, besides the internal piece, or besides the, credit piece. Once you map these together, you're in a position of truth in real time, which hadn't existed up to now.
Truth in real time. So I tell you, Pat, do you know JP Rangaswamy?
I know JP very well, very good. Very well. I know him back before his BT days.
Oh wow. So JP collaborated with me on this this new book, Augmented, and he wrote a chapter on trust and privacy. You're going to love it, right? Because he describes this shift in the way trust is being enabled and privacy is working in this new digital world. But he described when he was growing up in Calcutta, a close-knit community living in Calcutta. And if someone moved into that community, you'd be like, who are they? What, you know, what, who is this person? And there'd be this period of time where you're sort of checking them out and wanting to know who they were. And if these people kept to themselves, didn't sort of insert themselves in the community, there was this, you wouldn't trust them, right? Because you don't know who they are. You don't, and but if they sort of made themselves known and made an effort to get to know people, then that trust came more easily. His point in that, when he wrote this piece for Augmented, he said in the digital world, if you're a person that is off the grid and you don't have a Facebook profile, you don't have a LinkedIn profile, you don't use Twitter, you don't believe in any of that stuff, then how that's going to translate in the near term is in interactions like this, commerce interactions, a supplier won't be able to trust you because there's no digital profile. What do you think about that?
Exactly. And JP, interesting enough, JP was one of the first people I spoke to about Trustiv. And I started talking about, you know, we're going to build this identity network, this trust piece. And we sat on the steps of Dublin Castle about four web summits ago. And I was saying, you know, I have this idea that's really interesting. And I think that's the truth, you know, and that's what it comes down to. This is down to truth. Is this person who they say they are and can I absolutely trust them? And that's the key part nowadays. This isn't about, does this credit card work? Because a credit card works most of the time.
Right.
Are you the owner of this credit card, and does your digital identity match your physical identity, and is there trust there?
Yeah, yeah. So, Paul, maybe I can ask you about the role of something like Prama in the moment in the US, where we're doing the shift to EMV. There's a lot of it's chaotic. Some merchants are shifting, others aren't. Where does data have a role to play in sort of the changes we're seeing, not just from the shift from Magstripe to EMV and the changes in POS terminals and things like that, but also now a shift towards tokenization and mobile payments? So, what's the role of data to play in all of this?
Well, I think the key word there, Brett, is data, right? And we're talking about big data. And everything that you've mentioned on the show today has to do with data, whether it's the amount of data used to make a credit decision or to make an identity decision, the amount of data that's stored in the world. And Prama, just to play out there, is our idea and the vision of Prama is to enable our clients of all size to better able to visualize and manage their data both today and in the future. And what do I mean by that? It's, we talk to our clients and our clients are telling us, I can't manage the amount of data I have. And these are small clients. These are the largest clients in the world are telling us the same thing. They're saying, I don't have as much analytic capability as I need or that I want. I may have analytic capability, but I'm not always getting the perspectives I need. And so our Prama solution is meant to help our clients solve those problems, and doing it by whether it's looking at market data, looking at their own data, looking at benchmark data, peer data, bringing all that into one place that they can go in and access. That's what we're doing with Prama and how that relates to big data. I think, and you just mentioned EMV as an example. Here's another whole set of data that's going to be captured in the market. How do our clients look to use that data and how they do business? That's the vision of Prama, is we help them manage that.
So I don't know whether you guys saw, there was a great article on payments.com about the fact that convenience trumps security when it comes to consumers. But, is there just an expectation from consumers now that this security will be built in, and then, all the merchants and the processors, they've got to worry about these implications? Because we don't want security if it takes extra effort as consumers. We actually want these interactions to be faster.
It's a great point, Brett. A great point. And that was one of the other reasons why we built TrustEV. What we found was that when we, in our last business, we had the fraud and we put up verified by Visa or, MasterCard Secure. And the problem was that the consumer didn't want that. It led to drop-offs. It led to this feeling of, hey, what's happening here? I'm buying something and now you don't trust me. And that's what we built it for. We built it for security should be completely invisible. It should protect the merchant and the customer shouldn't see anything. It has to be real time. It has to be as much data as humanly possible. But the human part of the transaction, that should be invisible to the human.
Right. And that's where technologies like this, like a digital footprint, really... Now getting to that point, stuff. So let me ask you two further questions before we finish the show. So I'm going to have time for one. If you're a bank, you're out there right now and you're making this transition to real time, what should I be doing right now, apart from hiring you guys, to make sure I'm in the real time world?
I think you said it yourself, hire us. I think there is no one like TransUnion for the absolute amount of data that's available. There's no one like us for real time, and there's probably no one like us for that long-term depth of information, multi-decades of information about the individual consumer and real-time information about the digital footprint of any transaction.
Yeah, fair enough. So where can we find out information about TransUnion and Prama, Paul?
You can definitely find it on the website at transunion.com. And we have specific pages that you can go to, or specific announcements that you can go to. But I would just search on the website, or you could certainly do a search on the World Wide Web as well.
Cool. So, listen, Pat, when I'm offline after this, I'm going to send you a copy of Augmented.
So, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm a huge fan of yours, Brett, and, you know, I didn't know you were collaborating with JP.
Makes it even better.
I'm a fan of for many, many years.
So let me send you that and read the chapter that JP wrote, because you guys might be able to use that in your discussions with others.
Fantastic. Really appreciate that.
A couple hundred copies and we'd be happy. All right, listen, guys, we're going to go. Thanks for joining us on the show today, Paul and Pat.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much, Brett. Bye-bye. No problem.
And thanks again to Temenos, who sponsors the show. Next week, we're going to be talking about blockchain in Asia specifically, and Rob Finlay is going to be helping us out as the guest host. Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.